Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game. Consider us like the vaccine for football finance, but more readily available. I'm Kevin Day, and here's Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, if only we'd taken producer guy's advice to invest in those Pfizer shares.
Exactly, yes. Now, he's put all of your profits from the podcast into Pfizer, so he'll be sending us a postcard from the Bahamas, and you'll be still in still in South London, I suspect, wondering how you're going to buy a turkey this Christmas.
Well, you never know. Santa might manage to fit a solid gold yacht down my chimney, you know, as I huddle around a tiny fire. Later in the show, we'll be hearing from Jeff Banks, who's one of the directors of Chester FC, a fan-owned club in Vanarama National League North. Jeff, it's a really good interview. Jeff is the delicious filling in a new sandwich because it's Thursday, Kieran, and as usual, we have plenty of stories to discuss. And the one that came slightly out of the blue yesterday, we were going to talk about it anyway, Kieran, but as we know, there was a meeting yesterday. Richard Masters, chief executive of the Premier League, Rick Parry, chair of the EFL, and Greg Clark, chair of the FA, all appeared before MPs this week, but only two of them came out, essentially. Which was an odd situation. I don't think Greg Clark, as he said goodbye to Mrs. Clark in the morning, imagined that he'd be coming home with some, I've got some news, darling. How did it go? Not brilliantly. It's a big story, and he probably did the right thing before we discuss the actual finances of what happened.
Yeah, I think he did the only thing. I was listening and watching this on Parliament TV,
of course,
yesterday morning. A great channel the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. That they spoke to Richard Masters initially, then Rick Parry, then Rick and the other guy together. So that was quite good. And they were effectively say, "Knock your heads together. Stop this silly squabbling."
Yeah.
And there was some strange stuff that was coming out when they asked Richard Masters, were there any strings attached to the loans and grants to the EFL, to the £50 million offer? Masters said, well, when we sent it to the EFL, there wasn't. We might have initially thought about it. Then he was saying that the Premier League won't let any clubs go bust. And I think the DCMS, sometimes they seem to be picking up their information from newspapers rather than doing the necessary investigations themselves. The DCMS chair, Julian Knight, who was pretty good, he didn't give them much wiggle room. He described the Premier League approach as pitiful. Yeah. At one stage, saying, how can you go and spend £1.2 billion in the transfer market? And Richard Masters was going, well, yeah, we've had this discussion ourselves. You know, ultimately, it's Roman Abramovich's toy, Chelsea, and he can do what the hell he wants with it. So, yeah, and if that involves signing players as opposed to supporting clubs in the Championship owned by billionaires, then so be it. So it did get a bit feisty at times. And then when Rick Parry came on and Julian Knight again asked both Richard Masters and Rick Parry about why they couldn't just go and sign off on a deal for Leagues 1 and 2. And Masters said, well, as far as I'm concerned, we can. Rick Parry then said, well, that's been rejected by the clubs in League 1 and 2 because they wanted to be loyal to the Championship. So I'm tweeting all this literally live as it's going through. And Andy Holt, who's the owner of Accrington Stanley, he chips in and says, well, this has never been discussed with us as owners of League One and Two. So there was an awful lot of contradiction, inconsistency, and so on. Because you know, there are there are owners in the Championship worth over £30 billion between them. Rick Parry says, well, hold on, you know, why should we be means testing people who are receiving part of the handout, which is a valid point.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's supporting means testing as a being for the reason for why you should be deciding on the contents of Project Big Picture. So again, an inconsistency. So this was the hors d'oeuvre to Greg Clark. So Greg Clark came in. Now I recall Greg Clark from last year when he was also quizzed by the DCMS as to. What have you done at the FA in respect of the demise of Bury Football Club? To which his reply, which was incredibly sniffy, was, well, we didn't even know that Bury had been kicked out of the league. We only got involved 4 weeks after they were expelled, which makes you wonder, what on earth are you doing? You know, apart from picking up your 180 grand a year and a similar sum for being a vice president of FIFA. He was on my naughty step. Then he managed to. I think he was going for some form of bingo in terms of welcome to the 1970s bigotry. Yeah. So he started off by referring to coloured players.
Yeah.
It's not a very smart thing to say when the Football Association has just started a new campaign in terms of diversity, and the campaign is very good. Greg Clark's not a racist, but he does use language which really is unnecessary to use. You know, for anybody that has been keeping aware of the change in language, and we're talking probably 30 or 40 years ago, he should have known better. It was pointed out to him and he apologized. And if he just said that, I think people would have just said, you know, God, the guy's a bit behind the times, not very smart. But then he said, oh no, I'm not just going to do that. There's not many Asian people, South Asian people in football because they spend all of their times on a spreadsheet rather than playing football, and it's people from Afro-Caribbean. I'm going, well, hold on, that is just the laziest of racial stereotyping.
Yeah.
You know, you and I, Kevin, we're both from Irish heritage.
Yeah.
You know, should he therefore think that we should be down the nearest ditch, digging up? Digging holes in grounds and trying to build a new railway tracks. It just seemed ridiculously ill thought out, lazy, and behind the times. But he wasn't finished there. Then DCMS brought up the issue of no gay players have come out. To which his reply, and he did start to say, well, given the level of abuse that other players get, why invite further abuse from the trolls on Twitter and other forms of social media? And that seemed, okay. I think he's now talking some sense. And then he sort of referred to being gay as a lifestyle choice. I'm going, no. No, that's it's well known. I'm from Brighton. I'm not going to go into details, but certainly when I was younger, I knew about the gay scene pretty well in Brighton. Being a vegetarian is a lifestyle choice. Yeah. Becoming a stamp collector is a lifestyle choice. Yeah. Being gay is part of you. It's part of your genetic makeup. I'm 6'3". Yeah, being a lanky twat isn't a lifestyle choice. It's what your part of your DNA. So that was absolutely appalling, I thought, and showed a complete lack of understanding of issues of that nature. And then with regards to why are there relatively few girls playing football compared to the USA, he said, oh, well, girls of 5 to 7, that they don't like the ball being kicked hard at them. I'm going, hold on, when I was 5, if I was in goal and the ball was coming right for my head, I'd duck.
Yeah.
In fact, I was probably still doing that at 25. So, yeah, just terrible.
There's a couple of issues, and I'm almost reluctant to discuss it, Kieran. It's not. It's sort of outside our remit, but we can't not discuss it in a sense. The lanky twat thing, first of all, the lanky might not be a lifestyle choice, Kieran, but you know, let's face it. You make your own decisions about whether or not you're a twat. I just wonder whether we missed an opportunity. I mean, it was absolutely right for him to resign because he piled just mistake after mistake, essentially. You know, I just wonder whether there's two things here, whether this would have been a perfect opportunity for him to publicly say, oh, my God, we really do need some training at the FA, don't we? I want to publicly go through this process and atone for what I said. That would have been one option. But also the other thing is, he hasn't resigned for presiding over an FA that's given no opportunity whatsoever to black coaches, black directors. You know, they're really important issues that he could have resigned. He's failed in his duty. The FA have failed in their duty to Asian footballers, to women footballers, to women referees, to black referees, and yet no hint of any sorrow or consolation. And yesterday, all he had to say initially, and that's the last refuge of the scoundrel, was, well, if I said those things, then I'm sorry. It's like, well, of course you said them. Don't come this. I'm not entirely sure I said them. It doesn't sound like me. But he had to go. I mean, it's an odd thing for two middle-aged men doing a podcast to say, but you know, looking at the three middle-aged white men representing football yesterday wasn't a particularly good look. But on what was actually said about the finances, Kieran, there are three things that I picked up on, and two of them you've mentioned. When Richard Masters was challenged by MPs about the amount of money spent by the Premier League, he said, well, we have to be competitive. It's the only way we can stay ahead of the rest of the world and get the broadcasting money in is by having the best players in the world. And, you know, my answer to that is the two best players in the world don't play in English football. Rick Parry's notion that the EFL clubs, League One and League Two clubs, wanted to be loyal to the Championship seems to me risible, considering the lack of loyalty they all showed to Bury. We know that most of them were perfectly happy to vote Bury out of existence. But there was one other thing that Rick Parry said as well, Kieran, when he said that 10 EFL clubs were struggling to pay November's wages. Now, I don't know whether that should be as many as 10 or only 10. Were you surprised by that figure when he said 10 clubs were struggling?
No, not at all. I mean, I think we both said that you know, the Premier League and the EFL have done the right thing in that they've advanced money. And yeah, actually, I was quite surprised that they all managed to go and pay the October wages. So this has been coming. I mean, Rick Parry did say, I think, appropriate things in terms of some form of government support, in terms of giving clubs a tax break, lowering the rate of VAT on club earnings during this time, and things of that nature. 10 clubs, yeah, they will be struggling because if one of your major sources of income is being denied to you by government, and look, I know we're in lockdown 2 now, but we weren't in lockdown 2 in August.
Yeah.
When clubs could have been generating cash. You know, we've also had the conversation that clubs below Tier 6 have been able to play matches in front of a paying audience. So the government's approach has been clunky. They've done some good things. They've done some not good things, and I think they should be held to account, as should the clubs. And as for Greg Clark, for me, the most frustrating thing is that the purpose of the investigation by DCMS has now been completely hijacked,
yeah,
by him being a bellend.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are genuine issues in terms of finance. One of the things which came out was Julian Clark said, Julian said that Masters and Parry should now have to submit a weekly report to him, in effect, to say how much progress they have made with regards to coming up with a deal in respect of the EFL and the Premier League. So clearly, the view of government is that it's football's problem and football should sort this out. It is football's problem. I agree to an extent, but the government has made the problem worse.
Yeah.
So they're not entirely innocent. And there is so much politics taking place because Rick Parry is still shouting, Project Big Picture, best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
And, you know, it looks as if, you know, from Andy Holt's comments and also some comments I've had from other EFL senior executives that they've not been given the full story. And they're not over happy about it. But the nature of the EFL at present is that it is very sort of it's a quasi autocracy because they rejected the recommendations of the Bird and Bird report into governance. They don't want independent directors. And you know, I'm not making too many parallels with what's happening in the US. But when you give people power, which Project Big Picture is aimed at doing, they're very reluctant to give up on it.
Yeah,
and so you know, Rick Parry says, well, there's nothing to stop the owners of the big six clubs actually at a future date making it one person, one vote.
Yeah.
Well, autocracies don't work like that.
Yeah. The reason I highlighted Rick Parry saying 10 clubs is because part of me was relieved it was only 10, Kieran. That was the point I was trying to make. I wondered if you were expecting it to be more, was what I was sort of trying to get you to elaborate on.
I think 10 for November is probably a fair number.
Right.
I think that could be 15 in December.
Right.
And so on, depending upon how things progress. Now, clearly, with the news which has come out from Pfizer with regards to the vaccine, I think the whole world has sighed a collective set of relief. And
you painted yourself into a corner there, Kieran, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
You didn't want to use the word sigh twice, but it's too late.
But it's still going to take time before crowds can return and clubs can start to generate money. And there is now an embedded myth that the clubs in the EFL require £250 million to survive. That is not the case. You know, Stoke City's owner is, you know, one of the directors of Stoke City's owner paid themselves £300 million last year.
Yeah.
Stoke have said consistently they're opposed to financial fair play. As far as they're concerned, they should be allowed to put as much money into the club as they so desire. So if that's the case, great. If that is the case, then they don't need a government handout. And as a taxpayer, you know, I think I would feel uncomfortable about money going to organisations which are owned by billionaires.
Yeah, I agree. As we'll find out in our brilliant interview with Jeff Banks later in the show, Kieran, it's not just the EFL. National League clubs are baffled by offers of help as well. Which is a strange thing when you're baffled by an offer of help and things are going wrong somewhere. We spent longer than I thought we would do discussing this, so I do want to move on. But there are two very quick points I want to make. You mentioned the fact that crowds are not allowed into English football. It must have been quite frustrating for owners of League One, League Two clubs and National League clubs to watch, as I did last night. It was a quiet night, Shea Day. I was watching Crusaders versus Coleraine, I think it was. Northern Irish football, and despite the fact that Northern Ireland have had a much more severe short shutdown than we have, there were crowds in that game. So it's doable. I mean, there weren't many people in there, but there were people in there, and it was a sort of fillip to the soul to see that. But it is doable, and it needs to be done as quickly as possible. And then the last thing, Kieran, is that I'm sure you share my hope that this campaign to get Dion Dublin the job as head of the FA comes to fruition, because I would be a very happy man if Dion Dublin was both presenting Homes Under the Hammer and chairing the FA, because it's one of my favourite things on Homes Under the Hammer. And it's something that every single comedy writer and comedian in London shares a love of. His mystification every time he sees a set of stairs. The fact that he has to indicate. I don't know if it's never occurred to him that there is no other way without mechanical means to get from floor one to floor two. But I would love to see Dion Dublin in the middle of an important FA meeting suddenly go, look at those stairs. It's fantastic. Now, Dion Dublin, of course, is a star, but no one's just an actor anymore, Kieran. Everyone's a legend these days. So Hollywood legends, Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds, held a Zoom meeting with Wrexham fans this week to spell out their plans for buying the club from the Supporters Trust. And they used the word global brand. So that's a very ambitious project, isn't it?
It is indeed, and it was a very slick presentation. It was done in the right way. They took it seriously. They said that they had principles to protect the heritage of the club, to uphold community values, to increase the exposure, as you were saying, and also to reward the faith of fans. And then they made promises, and this is probably going to upset our guest on the show, Jeff Banks. They made four promises to beat Chester.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very good.
Yeah, we know it upsetting, Kieran, because we've already done the interview. Let's not get stuck in that time we did last week. Let's not predict things that we already know to be true. He was quite pleased that Chester FC dominated the news agenda from Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds. But as you say, it was a very slick presentation. They've done their research. They talked about Wrexham being the third oldest club on the planet. It will need a 75% majority of the Wrexham supporters who own the club to say yes, and I would imagine they will do. One question that I had, Kieran, would individual trust members be rewarded? So, I mean, say if they were to buy the club for, let's just use £10 million as an example, would that £10 million be distributed among the 2,000 or so members who own the club, or does it go into a separate bank account? What happens to that money?
It would go into a separate pot, would be my understanding.
For
the benefit of the club as a whole. If you are owning things on a trust basis, then it's a non-profit organisation.
Right. So there's no money to be made. If producer Guy is listening to this on his solid gold headpiece, there's no money to be made in investing in a supporters trust club in the hope that this happens again and Hollywood legends buy it out.
No. So, you know, if people think that that somebody's going to, you know, Nick Nolte or whoever, you know, I'm hopeless on Hollywood. I don't know why I said Nick Nolte there.
I thought you said Nick Knowles, which is an even worse impression. Would you imagine this will go through? Does it strike you, Kieran, that these people are serious football fans, or does this strike you as the outcome of a kind of drunken chat one night in a Hollywood trailer to go, let's buy a football club?
I think that the fact that the initial interest, which took place about 3 or 4 weeks ago, has now solidified into a concrete proposal means that they could have sort of walked away over the course of the last month.
Yeah.
But there does seem to be a genuine affection for Wrexham. And I think both you and I have been to the club in its former form, as fans, and it's a great atmosphere. I went to a fans United event there when they were going through a lot of their troubles, and the fans were just absolutely brilliant. There's nothing they couldn't do for you. They're so passionate. They're so friendly as well. So yeah, I was very impressed. It was sort of one of those sort of things. You get a bit, we're not getting teary, but you were genuinely emotional because we both supported clubs who we've thought, could this be the last time I'm going to see them? And I'm sure we've been to those matches and know how it felt. I think it's a great chance for Wrexham to turn things round. They want to renovate the racecourse ground. They want to have proper training facilities. They want fans on board. They want it to be sort of, you know, yes, they will be the nominal big cheese owners, but as far as they're concerned, it will still be a fan community club. And they're the custodians, and I think that word, in the environment of the project big picture, where clubs are just money making vehicles, is something to be applauded.
And what will it take financially to buy Wrexham, Kieran?
It won't take much. It will just be a case of if you agree to sell the shares, there'll be an agreed price as an initial investment, and then they'll set a budget to go forwards in terms of the management team.
Now, Kieran, I'm looking forward to you. Everybody knows my theory of presenting this pod, this kind of professional laziness, where I wait to be surprised by the answer to the question I put to you. And I'm really intrigued by this because the vaccine news has been a little cheer up for us all. But it's been surprisingly good news for Manchester United, I'm told.
Yes, and anybody who was watching the stock market as the Pfizer news was released will have seen a load of shares shoot up and down. So the big winners in lockdown, the likes of Zoom, the likes of Peloton, the sort of the indoor gym people, their shares took an absolute tumble.
Wow.
But Manchester United shares went up by around about 10%. That added £225 million to the value of the club instantly.
Why?
Now, because what the stock market doesn't like is uncertainty. Manchester United, when they are playing a match in front of 76,000 fans at Old Trafford, generate £4 million every match.
Right.
Now, before the announcement, people are thinking, well, we've written off this season. Are we going to have to go and write off some of next season as well?
Right.
So, right. What the stock markets were saying, well, all of these £4 million, we don't know when we can start putting them into our spreadsheets.
Sure.
Again. And with the belief that there's going to be X million doses of the vaccine available by the end of this year, and the vast majority of the population will be done by the end of 2021, apart from the Looney Tunes that think it's some form of X-Files type of conspiracy and refuse to take it. Therefore, it's brought forward the date at which football can return, and therefore the date at which Manchester United, who generate more money from a home game than any other club in the UK, can start to get the tills ticking over again. So it wasn't just Manchester United, because as you know, I am a bit of a nerd, which I hide well, of course. So Dortmund.
I'm hiding my surprise now.
Well, okay. Dortmund shares went up 10%. Roma's shares went up by a third. So all of those companies, all those clubs whose shares are traded on the stock market, they reacted very positively. It's not the end, but it is hopefully the beginning of the end of this nightmare that we're currently going through.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've got a cousin who's one of those Looney Tunes people. We don't speak very often, but he's shared his view on social media that the vaccine is an excuse for the government to inject tiny cameras into our bodies, although what they expect to find in his head, I do not know. less good news for Manchester United, Kieran. And again, this is another surprising story for me. Manchester United and Manchester City are under pressure over their failure to become accredited living wage employers. And I'm surprised by this story, Kieran, because you'd think Manchester United, basking in the reflected glory of Marcus Rashford, would certainly want to do this. And Man City are usually very good and very responsible over social issues. So I was surprised to read this question about both clubs.
Yeah, I think with Manchester United, over the course of the pandemic, it's always been two steps forward, one step back. They were really good at in lockdown one at getting money back to fans who bought match tickets. They committed to paying their match day staff for the remainder of the season, even though they didn't have anything to do on that. So yeah, all of this was absolutely fantastic. Then they spent £25 million propping up the share price, which seemed a bit strange. And now this, the national living wage is £8.72 per hour, and Manchester United are paying that. But local food banks have said that there's a real living wage for people who've got rent to pay, and food prices are going up and things of this nature. And the real living wage is estimated at £9.30 per hour.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're not talking about a huge sum of money. To put that into context, £9.30 is an hourly rate. David De Gea, on the basis of his present contract, what a Manchester United employee would earn in an hour, he earns in 4 seconds.
Wow.
So could Manchester United afford to do it? I would say that they probably could. They will argue, well, they're paying the national living wage. They don't need to go any further. Again, I'm surprised at Manchester City. Normally, they are very switched on. And again, over the course of the lockdown, along with Manchester United, you know, both clubs have done fantastic things in providing food and parcels and facilities. So they've done lots of good things. But this is something which impacts upon their regular staff members. And I think it would be a really good gesture by the board, by the Glazers, who, remember, are taking out £22 million a year along with the other shareholders in dividends each year, paying themselves, you know, seven-figure salaries, just to say, yeah, okay, we may be based in Florida. We don't turn up to the matches very often, but we want to show a bit of solidarity for the people that keep up the reputations of these clubs, because I always take the view that when you go somewhere, it's your first encounter with that first employee that often shapes your view of the institution. And again, as an away fan who's been regularly to both the Etihad and Old Trafford, the staff are always fantastic. You know, the stewards, the support staff, they've always been absolutely brilliant, as has been the case, I would say, in 99% of the clubs I've visited.
Yeah, so I mean, when we were growing up, Kieran, well, growing up, when we used to watch football in the 70s and 80s, it was very far from the case. But I'd be hard pressed to find the Premier League club where the staff aren't fantastic and sympathetic. Well, yours, obviously, but apart from that, we're talking proper Premier League clubs. But you know, let's not get into that, though, Kieran. Let's maintain this spirit of goodwill rather than get into a tawdry local rivalry between Palace and Brighton, because our guest managed to crowbar his own tawdry local rivalry into this interview on several occasions. It didn't take much inviting, because not far from Manchester City and Manchester United are Chester FC, but financially they're on different planets. And we spoke to Jeff Banks, who is one of the directors at Chester, and this is what he had to say to us, and it's a really interesting interview.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Jeff, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
Can I just check, Jeff, does that mean that you are the club director responsible for fan engagement, or is that a job title?
Yeah, that's my portfolio. I also own the membership of City Fans United, that portfolio as well. So kind of a dual role at the club.
Brilliant. And before we chat properly, tell us a little bit, Jeff, about how you became a Chester fan and then how you got involved with the club.
Well, I attended my first Chester match back in 1982 at the 9 years old, I think it was. I have to think back then. It was quite an exciting match. I do remember it. We played Portsmouth at Sealand Road, our old ground. And it was one of those topsy-turvy games where we took the lead, then went 2-1 down, and then came back to storm it 3-2. And I was kind of sold on that, thinking that's how it was always going to be, watching Chester. But obviously reality took over, but the support never waned. You know, and it's been my hometown club, and it's been my life pretty much ever since. And then as time sort of went on, obviously Chester City ended up being liquidated. But before that, around about a year or so before that, I became involved with a supporters group, and we merged the supporters groups to become City Fans United. And about nine of us sat in a pub in Chester one evening, decided we were going to try and fight to save the football club, or at least football in Chester, you know, whichever we could do. And it kind of went from there. And I spent the first, when we did reform the football club, I spent the first 4 years as the media officer at the club. And then two little children came along, so I decided to maybe put the focus on them for a little while. But was joined the board again back in 2018, And to have been there ever since. It cost me a KFC on the way home from the board meeting that night to rejoin the board at my wife's request.
That's not a bad, Kieran. I don't know how you would you put that through the books, a KFC for a new club.
Well, if you look to see what the EFL did to Andy Holt at Accrington, it might have to go down as unwarranted payments.
Okay. And I've seen your Twitter feed, Jeff, those two handsome little children in their Chester shirts. Mm. You've given them no choice then.
Absolute brainwashing them. Absolutely for sure. The worst thing that could happen to me would be for one or two of them to turn out Wrexham fans, but I'm going to make sure that's never going to happen. Blue and white, it's the future.
We've already talked about Wrexham on this pod, I'm afraid. Now we'll have to ask you about that before we finish. It's funny to talk about Chester FC. I keep when I was writing my notes, I kept having to cross out the city because I grew up as a kid and it was Chester City. Do you ever make the same mistake?
Not anymore. I mean, we'll always be City. You know, that's why we part of the name is City Fans United. You know, we don't want to lose that. It's part of our history. It's quite a checkered history, really, that Chester City endured, but also some of the great times we had as well in the mid-80s, especially. You know, when in the mid-90s, seems to be mid-decades, we seem to do okay. But, you know, Chester FC is the name that we had before that, and it's the name that fans voted for when we actually put that up for, you know, nomination. You know, so it'll always be Chester one way or the other. But, you know, we had it quite a lot in the early years, you know, where away announcers would name us as a city and sometimes, you know, broadcasters as well. We don't, you know, it wasn't anything to get upset about because, as I say, you know, it's what we are.
As you mentioned, you've had a couple of roles at Chester FC, Jeff. Do you think fans of Premier League clubs realise just how much clubs like yours rely on volunteers like you?
It's a good question. I don't think... a great deal of them actually do. I think if they came down to experience it a day at a, you know, a non-league club or, you know, a lower league club even, you know, I think they think it was just all in place and everybody just gets paid, you know, as simple as that. But, you know, I think we all know ourselves and, you know, the most important thing is that we work for each other. You know, this football club and many others at our level who are, you know, volunteer driven, just wouldn't be the club they are if it wasn't for those people putting in the hours, literally for the love of the game.
Kieran, do volunteers have to be included in accounts, Kieran, even if they're not paid expenses?
No, you only put in the actual numbers in accounts. The hard work and the effort and the love doesn't appear because accountants don't understand love.
Kieran, we know from vast experience on this pod that you understand many kinds of love, Kieran, and this is not the time where Jeff is on the line with us to talk about them, but it would be lovely if accounts did include love in one of the columns, wouldn't it? Because there would be some clubs in the lower leagues that would be much further up the league. Jeff, before we discuss how the pandemic has affected your club financially, and I can't tell you how I'm looking forward to not having to use that sentence again. Mm-hmm. COVID's actually affected the club personally this week quite bad. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, obviously, you know, some clubs have had positive tests and that's happened to us in the last week. I think it's going to be kind of difficult for most clubs to get away from it. Up until now, we've managed to do so. But yeah, we have a couple of the players have actually, you know, tested positive, you know, and thankfully they're okay. But obviously they're having, you know, the whole squad are having to, you know, to self-isolate now. You know, so we're without football for a couple of weeks, which is hard enough, you know, having the football where you know the fans can't go, but when you haven't got any at all, it's even harder to bear with, really.
And does that mean there's been issues with refunding streaming money that people have paid to see the games on streams? Have you had problems with that?
No, not as yet. So the way it happened, obviously we were due to play an away game at York City. So there would probably be refunds, you know, coming back from those who, you know, had sort of paid for that. But that was being run by York. Our next scheduled game was going to be Hereford on the Tuesday night. So obviously that was cancelled. But the way our streaming works, we pulled together very quickly a service that enabled people to either buy a 3-month pass or individual games. But our season ticket holders also have been offered free streaming for the games as well. So in terms of refunds, we have not to worry about anything like that because the match we hope will eventually take place, you know, with the other games as well that people would already sort of, you know, have bought in the package or would have had that package via the season ticket offer.
We'll talk specifically, Jeff, in a little while about the National Lottery Support Grant. But before that, can you give us an overview of how the club has been affected in general financially by the last 6 months?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it goes without saying, if a football club relies on match day income, you know, amongst other things like commercial deals and, you know, extra sort of income on match days through like kiosks and bars, if that isn't coming into the ground, then there's literally no money at all at the football club to, you know, to try and sort of pay people. You know, we had an outstanding, an outstanding sort of offer by the players when we had the playoff matches where they actually donated their wages back to the football club, you know, and that was incredible. And it just shows how together, you know, the players and the management team are here at the club with the supporters. But in terms of, you know, March was difficult. We were set to play at home to Boston United, but we felt very uncomfortable at that time with going ahead with the game, given that what was appearing to be following. So since that day, you know, it's been really hard. We've had a few challenges throughout the summer, you know, and the season tickets obviously that went on sale, you know, have helped to get us through to where we are now. But obviously, you know, we need that match day income, and it's what a club like us needs to have, you know, coming in through the door to enable us to continue.
Yeah, on this pod, Jeff, we're massive fans of support our own clubs, but I suppose at a time like this, it makes it harder for you because you haven't got a wealthy owner or a wealthy group of owners that you can rely on for cash injections, have you?
No, not at all. You know, that's one thing that, you know, we've been proud of is that, you know, we're not in debt. We're a fan-owned football club, and whatever money comes in is the only money we can spend. But, you know, we've got a great set of supporters who, you know, have dug deep more than one occasion, you know, and have helped us out and have done so again with the season tickets, even knowing that potentially, you know, we wouldn't have a full season to enjoy. I mean, hopefully that will still be the case, you know. But yeah, I mean, there's nobody to call on who's suddenly going to throw money at us. So, you know, we've got to do the work ourselves, and, you know, it's a case of grinning and bearing it and working our backsides off to make sure we've still got a football club to support come the end of the season.
A couple of weeks ago, Jeff, we had a very passionate interview with Ben Clasper, who's the chairman of Dulwich Hamlet, and he was very vocal about what he thought was the unfair distribution of the National League, National Lottery grant money. Do you agree with him?
Absolutely. It's been a shambles. It's simple. All clubs were asked to submit, you know, figures as to what match day income and associated income they would have lost out on based on last season. You know, we have had an average attendance of 2,000 supporters coming into our football games. And, you know, the detail that was provided, so it was provided at short notice. And yet, when the results came out the other week as to what the allocation was going to be, it left most people with scratching their heads, because there's no way on earth that a formula that was linked into our spreadsheets has been utilised to distribute the allocation of funds. There's no way at all. And most disappointing thing in my book is that we've not even had an explanation as to what formula was used. But also, it's so, you know, when you've got a club in the, you know, the league above us who are getting a third of the attendance at their home match days, and yet they're getting, you know, what, £40,000-£50,000 a month more than ourselves. It's, well, I'm at a loss to describe how they even came to that decision.
You've got £36,000 a month, is that right?
£36,000 a month, yes, that's correct. That's what we were allocated, along with, I think it was five other clubs in the same league.
Kieran, what I don't understand is, and there was a very passionate statement on Chester FC's website saying that what Jeff has just told us, that they didn't even know the formula that was used. Do you have any idea what it is? Because if you don't know, then this whole thing is ludicrous. And it just seems, like Jeff says, just totally shambolic that the clubs don't even know the parameters by which this money was distributed, when this money is literally life or death to some of these clubs, Kieran.
Well, it appears to have been based on perhaps those clubs that have been in the EFL before and therefore have tended to have larger fan bases. They get a 15% or 20% premium over the clubs who have just been members of the National League, and the rest is based on the division in which the clubs are in. But as Jeff's rightly said, it's quite fluid in the National League, and we've got some of the clubs with bigger fan bases who are in National League North and South, and they're the ones who are suffering the most in terms of lost match day revenue. So it's a very clunky system. And I'm always of the view that if a decision is made quickly, it isn't necessarily made in the best interests of all. So perhaps if there had been more engagement with the clubs, we could have come up with something which was a broader representation of the money that they were losing. Whenever you cut up a cake, there's always going to be somebody that ends up better off or worse off than the others. But this appears to have been a bit of a pig's breakfast.
And Jeff, as well, that statement on the club website is very scathing about the lack of communication from the National League. Has that improved at all?
I wouldn't suggest so, no. I think what's been the frustrating thing is that the National League were urging us to be professional throughout, which I do think, you know, we have maintained professionalism in what we could easily have gone, you know, far reaching the other way. But the before the actual monies announcement came through, we were told by the league, you know, this is coming, you've now got the confidence to go and start the season. But, you know, that it's impossible to be confident when you don't actually know sort of what funds are coming in. At that point, we thought, well, okay, hopefully, you know, with the basis of the spreadsheets that have been sent over, you know, we've got an accurate sort of view of what will be coming back to us. But then when the announcement is made, it's kind of your jaw drops. You just think, well, how on earth can we attempt to survive when we're still getting no income and we're still being played behind closed doors? And that's what it was all about. You know, this is the funding to try and keep clubs going without that lost income that would have been normally coming through the turnstiles. So, you know, the whole purpose of the £10 million funding was to help clubs. And I it's a struggle as to how they came to giving us, you know, £6,000 more than maybe a club in our league who has, you know, a quarter of the attendance. I just can't work it out. I mean, the easiest thing I can liken it to is imagine like two families living in houses next to each other. You've got a pot of £100 to give to those, you know, those families. There's two people in one house and there's a family of five in the other. You give two people, you would give them the £80, and then the family of five, you give £20. It's just ridiculous. You know, it wouldn't happen then, so why is it happening now?
I promise, Jeff, and I promise our listeners as well, that this interview will end on a lighter note. We'll talk about football at the end of it. But I think your fans would like to know as well, if you can't get more money out of this lottery grant, and there has been good news this week about a vaccine, but if the current lockdown rules continue, how long can you cope without getting more money from the National Lottery?
Well, I think realistically, and you know, this is something we're discussing on a weekly basis at board level, it'd be remiss of us not to do so. You know, it's hard to budget because you don't know what might be coming through or what won't be coming through. All we can sort of try and work out is how long we could go if we were having to play the full season behind closed doors. Or the other alternative would be if it's obvious that the club can't make it to the end of the season, then we have to put a plan into place for hibernation. And I think there'll be a lot of clubs out there who are having to do exactly the same thing at the moment. So we, in terms of the next round of funding, you know, after the 10 million, I really do think the clubs need to know by the start of December as to what will be coming through, just to enable us to plan forward. Otherwise, you know, the league is going to be a disaster in the second half of the season if this isn't put into place, you know, in a timely manner. You know, we all need to know where we stand. The postponements aren't going to help because the season's just going to be, you know, kind of chaotic, really, with the amount of games that's probably going to have to be squeezed in. So, and I do appreciate, you know, it's a really tough position for the National League, but they had an easy job in ensuring that all clubs were properly funded here. Mm.
Kieran, is the notion of hibernation a practical way of going forward?
If we want Chester FC to exist and some of the other clubs in the National League, then there's a very good case for saying what we're going to be doing is in the best long-term interests of the clubs and also potentially the National League itself, because if there are a number of clubs who are unable to fulfil fixtures, it's going to make a farce of this particular season, and it's going to damage the reputation and the credibility of the league. And they've suffered damage, I think, as far as the hierarchy in charge at present in terms of their decision making. So it's certainly an option. Everybody is hoping, and you know, let's not get our hopes up too high, because the chances of getting a vaccine into a significant number of the population by the start of 2021 is tiny. But it would be hibernation is an option which has merits.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm more optimistic than Kieran about the fact that football will come back before the spring with supporters. But when that glorious day comes, Jeff, and you've hinted at the answer to this, but I really need to have this confirmed, because we have listeners all over the world who are fascinated by the rivalries in our football. When that glorious day comes and we're all back in the pubs and singing in the stands, are your rivals still going to be Wrexham and Wrexham only?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, it's a great history. You know, we've had plenty of battles over the years in terms of football battles. But there's obviously the England-Wales, you know, rivalry as well. When I go back 10 years to when we reformed the football club, it's one of the reasons that drove me on, you know, to do what I did, because I enjoyed those occasions so much. And, you know, it was incredible to actually have, you know, the derby sort of in 2004, I think it was. It was our, you know, we just got back into the National League, having sort of won the first, you know, three championships in a row to get back to it. And all the chips were down. We'd lost the first five games since coming back into the National League. Everybody was tipping Wrexham to absolutely roll us over. And we went over there and we beat them 2-0 in their own backyard. And when you've had the taunts of, you know, you're just a pub team, or you know, you let your club die, that's a favourite one for the Wrexham fans to sing to us, which I've never quite understood, because we did absolutely everything to save football in the city. But hey ho, that's part of the rivalry. I love the banter, you know, and I'll always have banter with Wrexham fans. It's, you know, it's part and parcel of who we are. And if you're a fan of a football club and you haven't got an opposing football club that you can have a little pop at and have a bit of fun with, then it's not much fun, is it?
It's not. And it's the only reason I do this pod, to be perfectly honest, so I get a Brighton fan to taunt at least twice a week. But I love the fact you say when we went over there. But Jeff, I mean, there's some bad news coming out of Wrexham this week. I mean, you quite possibly may not be in their league. I mean, global Hollywood superstars taking them over, going to make them into a global brand, apparently. They're going to be in the Champions League in 10 years' time.
Well, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I've been on the phone to Daniel Craig and Hugh Jackman, who are going to team up to do the same at Chester. So, grand plans. But, no, seriously, do you know what? And it, you know, in a way, I say good luck to them. It grates me to say that, but you know, their fans have been through the mill as well at different times, you know, and when things like this happen to your football club, well, it could be the next best thing, or it could be the, you know, 10 years time we could be looking at it completely different, you know, things might turn out differently. But it's certainly an unexpected one, and I'm sure their fans probably thought it was Christmas Day come early. I mean, it's probably like Man City when the Sheikh announced that, you know, he was buying Man City. I guess they probably were rubbing their eyes, thinking, "Are we, you know, seeing this properly?" But do you know what? The rivalry will still be there. We've seen in their mission statement the bit of fun that they've poked at us, saying, "Always beat Chester," and I think that was in their mission statement four times. So if that's uppermost in their thoughts, then they obviously want to stick around in the National League for a bit. They are the longest serving members of the National League, so. Why not for a few extra seasons? And hopefully if we can come up, then we can have a few games with them as well.
Good little dig at the end there, Jeff. Well, we spotted that. And also, I like the fact that if, you know, they've clearly told Ryan Reynolds and whoever the other one is that they have to mention Chester a couple of times to get on the Wrexham fan side. So that's a good thing. Jeff, I can't thank you enough for talking to us. You've been very informative and very gracious and very funny. What I'm planning to do is, when all this is over and we've hit those sunlit uplands, we're going to do a special pod, and we're going to get the people from Dulwich Hamlet on, and the people from Wigan, and you, and all the other clubs that are fretting at the moment. We're going to have the equivalent of a knees up. We'll we'll hire somewhere. Producer guy doesn't know this yet, but he's going to have to cop up. We're going to hire somewhere in the middle of the country and get people together and have a live pod and celebrate the fact that clubs like yours and Dulwich have come through this for the fans of Chester FC. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, Jeff. And is there anything we could do for you in the future, let us know and we'll publicise it and help keep you going. Cheers, mate.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Kieran.
We spoke to Ben Clasper of Dulwich, Kieran, and I wondered if Jeff would have a different perspective, but his perspective is exactly the same about the National Lottery money share out, if not more jaundiced. I mean, it beggars belief that there's no idea from these clubs what model was used to decide the distribution of the money, because no one can make head nor tail of it.
Yeah, I think it was done on the back of a pack of crisps or something like that. We said at the time, I think, quick decisions tend to be bad decisions. And you know, we've always been keen, communication, information, education. There are opportunities here for the National League Board to have explained things. And they seem to have drawn up the bridges and created a significant gap between themselves and some of their member clubs, and that's not good. That the National League is part of the pyramid of English football, and the way that the decision has been made, which doesn't take into consideration actual levels of attendance, increases the possibility of clubs going to the wall.
Yeah, do you know what I like about that interview as well, Kieran, and I'm sure you shared my pleasure at it, is that it's really interesting to get an insight into what it's like trying to keep a club going through this pandemic. It's sad, but it's interesting, and it's good for fans of Chester FC and clubs at that level. But more importantly, it was the fact that Jeff tried and failed, I think, to hide his dismay at Wrexham becoming a global brand. It's just really, you couldn't hear a man say "I wish them well" through more gritted teeth than that's what's brilliant about our game, Kieran. It's great. You know, we spend so much time talking about bad news on this pod. It's great to remind ourselves from time to time what the beauty of football really is, and one of the beauties of football is a rivalry that the rest of the world doesn't really even know about. and of all, you know, you and I know about that more than anybody else, Kieran, but just Wrexham and Chester, I just love that expression over there, going over there is great. Another club in non-league football, Tunbridge Angels, who I believe, Kieran, are only the second club in the world to have Angels as a title. I think Anaheim Angels are their baseball team. I think they're Angels, but I think I'm right in saying that. I'm sure I will be corrected by many people. I've got it wrong. Los Angeles doesn't count, by the way, people. The Tunbridge Angels got smashed 7-0 by Bradford City in the FA Cup, but that was a cloud that had a silver lining, or in this case, a claret and amber lining, because Bradford fans did a sterling job, didn't they?
Yeah, this is absolutely fantastic. And you know, we say that sometimes some people in football have what we refer to as a tin ear, but equally, the number of times that individual clubs, individual people at clubs, and here a fan base. Now, there's no historic link between the two clubs. There's no reason why Bradford City fans should put their hands in their pockets, but they did it because they realised that this would have been, under normal circumstances, a big earner for Tunbridge Angels.
Yeah.
And therefore, what they did, they set up a fundraising campaign. They went on to one of the crowdfunding platforms, and they set out to raise £1,000, sort of to try to make up for the loss of gate receipts, and that was fantastic. But they've ended up raising £6,060, which is phenomenal. You know, at a time when we know lots of people are on furlough, lots of people have also lost their jobs, there's lots of people who are self-employed who can't get any money out of the system because the system doesn't work perfectly and things of that nature, you've still got football fans saying, we found somebody that is suffering a wee bit more than we are, and we're going to reach out and help them because we understand what a football club is to the community in terms of identity and all of these things that we hold so close to our hearts. So, you know, hats off to the Bradford City fans, everybody that contributed there. You've restored faith in the game of football.
Yeah, I'm a great believer that what goes around comes around. Eventually, it might take some time, as I'm discovering, but I hope Bradford fans do well out of it. And what I loved about the story as well is basically it's one fan chatting to his mate saying, lads, lasses, what about this? And within a day, there's 500, 1,000 Bradford fans going, yeah, that's a great idea. And even if they only put a quid, £2 each, as you say, that becomes £6,000-£7,000, which to a club like Tonbridge is a massive amount of money. And it just goes to show what we try to illustrate on this pod as often as we can, that there is a great deal of good for all the negative we talk about in football. When you come down to fans level, there's a great deal of good things going on. And football fans appreciate that. Rivalries aside, I was going to say petty rivalries aside, Kieran, but ours is far more than that. Rivalries aside, you know, football fans share much more than they don't. So that's a brilliant story. And Bradford are a good club, so I'm not surprised. Darlington are also looking for a bit of fundraising as well for the FA Cup, aren't they?
Yes, Darlington, they were, of course, in the EFL. Now they're no longer there. They've had issues in terms of. Was it George Reynolds, the former safe breaker?
Yeah.
And the Reynolds Bowl, the stadium, which sadly I never got to visit, but I have been to. I did go to Feetham's to see an away game. That was how I spent my 35th birthday, driving in my mini metro to Feetham's. Those were the days, Kevin. That was rock and roll. So Darlington were drawn away to Swindon in the first round of the FA Cup. Now, again, normally they would expect to make a decent amount of money. They, from their point of view, playing a club sort of two or three divisions above them, they would have taken a large number of away fans. And that would have been a way of generating money because they get a share of the gate receipts. What happened here was the Darlington fan said, we want to increase the chances of our club being successful. So they did crowdfunding to pay for the hotel and the transport of their team to try to support them. And the team went and rewarded them by winning at Swindon, which was a fantastic result. They won 2-1. And on the back of that, they've made £17,000 in prize money. They're now going through to round two. They've been drawn away at Bristol Rovers. So what the fans are doing, again, they're saying, well, we can't physically go to the match. We can't physically be there in support, but it would have cost us a few quid to get there. So they're going to try to do something similar to try to keep this run going. So again, it's the goodwill that we all have towards the clubs that we love is really shining through. And it's always the case that what you tend to see, and this isn't me putting on a socialist worker placard or anything of that nature, but it's people who are from, tend to be working class backgrounds, people who have lived perhaps through some hard times, who tend to be the most generous when the chips are down.
Yeah, and I'm still optimistically convinced that there will be people in the grounds by the time the third round of the FA Cup comes around. So it'd be nice that if Darlington were to beat Bristol Rovers and get a big tie to make some money. And that's no disrespect to Bristol Rovers, of course. I love the fact as well, Kieran, that you managed to make the words Reynolds Bowl sound like a cut that you would do with your Manscaped equipment, basically. I'm just going for the Reynolds Bowl, darling. There won't be a moment. And the Baroness looks up from the paper and goes, OK. Now, Jade Thirlwall of Little Mix is not quite a Hollywood legend, but she has invested, Jade Thirlwall of Little Mix, has invested in her local team, South Shields FC. And Ali told me off the last time I said South Shields. It's not South Shields, it's South Shields. So I hope that's slightly better. So she's put some money into South. So this celebrity investment in the local team thing is to be encouraged, isn't it?
Yes, I think anything that raises the profile of a smaller club from a smaller town has got to be encouraged. Jade is now the honorary president of the club as well. So they had a crowdfunding exercise. The shares are priced at £12.50 each. If there's anybody in the South Shields area that wants to buy one, or just anybody in general, they've got until November the 28th to do so. They've raised, I think, £280,000 through this crowdfunding, and that's going towards improving the infrastructure of the ground, improving the facilities, which again turns around into a good thing because they can offer those facilities to the local community and everybody benefits.
Yeah. Now, finally, Kieran, and I've put this story last deliberately to give you a bit of time to vent. I'm almost nostalgic to say his name, but Steve Dale has trademarked the club badge in his own name rather than that of Bury Football Club.
Yeah, we've just been saying lots of really good things about lots of really good people. And now, I've had quite a long conversation today with somebody who is familiar with trademarks, patents, rights and things of this nature. I can't give too much away. He's asked for a degree of anonymity. Sure. His name is Rick. It's not Rick Parry, by the way, if anybody's thinking, blimey, Rick Parry's a man of many talents.
So you're talking about old Trademark Rick?
Trademark Rick.
Trademark Rick. Oh, is it? How is old Trademark Rick?
Yeah. Down the Porcelain's arms, isn't it?
Yeah, Trademark Rick, yeah. Okay.
And the more that you look into this, the more insidious, sadly, it becomes.
Really?
So what Steve Dale did was 2 months ago, he applied for a trademark for the crest of Bury FC. Now, if you do apply for a trademark, then there's normally a 60-day, two-month grace period where anybody could object to somebody using that trademark. So Bury Borough Council could have done so if they were aware of it. But they weren't, is my understanding. Nobody had previously claimed the crest. So it now looks as if that trademark, that crest, belongs to Steve Dale on a personal basis. It doesn't belong to Bury Football Club.
Right.
So if somebody wants to use that, then they're going to have to pay Steve Dale for the privilege. And this is where it starts to get really unpleasant. Because if you take a look at the crest of Bury AFC, it is very similar to that of Bury Football Club. And the trademark person I spoke to, who clearly is very learned in this particular issue, thinks that there could now be a potential problem. Because if AFC are trying to sell merchandise with their club crest, Steve Dale has a potential case to screw things up for them, because he will be potentially able to claim that there's confusion between the two crests, and as he's trademarked them, either get some form of injunction or start demanding royalties or things of this nature. And the thought of Steve Dale making any money out of a Phoenix club sort of turns my stomach. It is really unpleasant. It is straight from the Steve Dale playbook.
Yeah.
He's aware of how to be an awkward sod. He's been trying to split the Bury fan base and has had some success in this in terms of the alternative to Bury AFC. So this could run and run. What happens next, we don't know, but I suspect it. Knowing Steve Dale, it won't be good for football.
Yeah, to those of you listening who say, well, there are two sides to every story, you're right, actually. And we have asked Steve Dale on previous occasions to come and put his side of the story to us. It's a request that so far was met with silence, but producer guy will ask him again once more after this pod if Steve Dale or any of his accomplices, associates, whatever word you want to use, feels that they have a legitimate argument for doing so, please come on and tell us about it. In the absence of that, we will continue to consider him a rat of the highest order, because that's just he's not going to make money out of that. Bury are a brilliant club. The two Burys, it's a football town but they're not going to sell merchandise all over the world. He's not going to make money out of that. It's mischief is what he's making, and I just think it's despicable, and I think it's a shame in a pod where we've talked about fans doing good things, when we've talked to Jeff Banks, you know, a club like Chester FC, which is reliant on volunteers, that we have to end on an out-and-out businessman who's just causing problems. And we will do that wrong-ins pod one day, but I think it's just going to be about him. But in the meantime, you know, it's feel free. We'll talk to you. I'm a nice person. Kieran's a lanky twat, but, you know, he can do nice if he wants to. This has been our news pod. It's Thursday. It's Mondays, of course, is questions. And if you have a question you'd like to send in to us for Kieran to answer about any level of football anywhere in the world, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. Now, one of your questions might be, is there any Price of Football merchandise knocking about? Why? Yes, there is. We now have a merchandise shop, a virtual cornucopia of a merchandise shop, selling a mug and a T-shirt. So if you want a mug and a T-shirt, click on the link in the show description in your podcast app or on our Twitter profile. Go on, Christmas is coming. You can use a mug. Just imagine if you've manscaped yourself to within an inch of your pubic bone and you want a mug and a T-shirt to celebrate. Christmas is coming. Treat yourself. And don't forget Kieran's book, The Price of Football, and my book, Who Are You? 92 Football Clubs and Why You Shouldn't Support Them, are out now as well. Also just in time for Christmas, and you can get them through all the usual outlets. In the meantime, I've got my fingers crossed that with the Pfizer news, Kieran may not have to say this for too many more weeks or months to come, but I'll leave you in the capable hands of Kieran Maguire for his two-word message.
Well, stay safe, folks, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have, make sure you press that subscribe button to whoever your podcast provider is. And we don't understand why, myself and Kevin, but it does make a difference if you give us reviews, if you hit that, especially if you give us 5 stars. It doesn't, however, matter whatever you write about the show. So you could say it would be better off if it was presented by Jennifer Saunders and Rhys Mogg. Yeah, we don't care. It makes that, you know, we our egos can cope with the criticism, but if you could do it, helps us keep up the charts. And we are constantly asking people to come on the show, and the first thing they go and do is that if they've not heard of it, is that they'll go and look on the Apple charts, and this helps us get up them to add a bit to our credibility, which for two old grumpy men does make a difference.
Yeah, do you know what, if this show was presented by Jennifer Saunders and Jacob Rees-Mogg, I think I might listen to it. Bye, everybody. See you soon.
Bye-bye. The Price of Football. Price of Football.